Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani on IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm here with you every Thursday, and I have a great show planned for you today. I'll be inviting on in a little while my guest, Stephanie Sachs, who is a culinary nutritionist and author of a new book coming out, What the Fork Are You Eating? And I'm really excited to have Stephanie on. But before that, I want to share with you some things going on in and around the city and some news that I want to make you aware of and some things that you can all do to take action and do your part in making this world a little bit better place. So there's lots of things coming up in the New York, Long Island area. July 6th, the concert series at Restoration Farm continues. It's the first Sunday of every month during the growing season, and it's called the Tin House Music Concert Series. And it's from 2 to 5 out at Restoration Farm, which is on the property of Old Bethpage Village. And there are live concerts with an open mic from 2 to 3. So if you can make it down, I hear it's a great happening. Unfortunately, I keep not being able to make it for some reason or another. This weekend's July 4th weekend, of course, so I'll be heading up to Vermont to some of my favorite people and spending time with family and friends. So I won't be able to make it, but if you are around, it will be a great time. Next week starts my farm-to-table cooking class series. It's going to be every other Wednesday throughout the growing season. There's still a few spaces left if anybody's interested. It's from 6:30 to 9:30 on Wednesday evenings. And we'll be harvesting what is ready to harvest from my garden and cooking up a delectable meal. And then all sitting down to eat it family style. So it's really a great evening if you are available. Come join us for that. July 12th is a free organic vegetable gardening workshop out at the Gateway Community Farms in Huntington Station. That's a community garden that Slow Food Huntington was a part of in helping get started. And it's a great community garden. They have lots of workshops there, and this is the first one of the summer, July 12th at 3:30. July 19th, the Sylvia Center, which is a great nonprofit organization on the Lower East Side. They also have a farm upstate called Catchkey Farm in Kinderhook, and they will be having their farm-to-table benefit dinner that will benefit the programming that they have going on. That's from 6 to 9 in Kinderhook. You can find out more information about that at thesylviacenter.org. July 24th is a farm-to-table dinner for socially responsible investing. And I've talked to people about this a lot. Bill McKibben, did his whole Do the Math tour. One of the focuses of his tour and his talks was about divesting in fossil fuel companies and companies that are not in alignment with your moral and ethical beliefs. And so what do we do to make our money grow and keep away from those corporations that are against our belief system? Well, that's what this dinner is about, socially responsible investing. We've worked this year with a small group from Morgan Stanley, and they really did very well by us. So I wanted to share that with everybody. So if you're interested, send me an email at bhavani@iegreen, and I'll tell you more. July 27th, there's a yoga and farm-to-table cooking retreat out at the IE Green Homestead in Old Westbury. Dr. Nikki, who was a guest of mine a few weeks ago, she will be doing the yoga and meditation. Then we'll have a guided mindful walk around the homestead through the garden. There will be nutrition discussion, on-site harvesting, group cooking, and then poolside lunch and some time to relax in the pool. And that is July 27th from 11 to 4. So if you are available, you can sign up for that. There's a link from my website, iegreen.com. July 27th, North Shore, Slow Food North Shore, which used to be Slow Food Huntington, is welcoming in one of our newest Snail of Approval restaurants called the Purple Elephant. That's out in Northport. And that's going to be from 6 to 9 on Sunday. And you can find out more information both on my website and the Purple Elephant's website. And August 7th, Slow Food North Shore is also going to be welcoming another new Snail of Approval establishment called Sip Tea Lounge, and it's going to be a tea tasting, basically like a tea flight. And so that is in Huntington, August 7th from 8 to 10. So those are all some great things going on in and around the city. If you're available for any of them, please come on down for those. There's some things I want to encourage you all to take some action on. One is to tell Congress to protect your right to know. There's a new bill up for up in Congress called, well, we're calling it the Dark Act, but it's not really called the Dark Act. It's called, this bill is H.R. 4432, but it's, we're calling it the Denying the Americans the Right to Know Act. But basically what it is an act that will not allow states to pass laws that will require labeling for genetically modified foods. And this bill, which, you know, started small, now has 25 Republican co-sponsors, and it's really moving through Congress fast, and we really want to stop it. So there's a petition on my website to let your congressman know that we do not support this act, and we want, if anything, to require mandatory labeling of GMOs. There's also a petition on my site to support family farming. That's, you know, really exploding, and we want to support this trend. One in three families in America are growing something, and that trend is actually global. So check that out on my website. Also, I know I've talked in the past about child labor and how child labor is involved in, you know, whether it's Nike sneakers or making iPhones. Well, it's also involved in the production of cocoa and the production of coffee. Well, now it's come out that it's also involved in the production of shrimp. And so there's a petition on my website to demand Walmart and Costco to stop purchasing shrimp from places where they are exploiting children. And this is something that the Trans-Pacific Partnership bill, which is also trying to be passed through Congress, you know, this type of bill really does that. It goes into less developed countries and exploits the people there. You know, in Americans' constant desire for cheaper foods and cheaper everything, we keep seeking labor from countries where there are no laws to protect the disenfranchised. And so we really need to do the right thing. And, you know, that's one of the beauties when you go into a farmer's market and you're buying directly from the farmers. We really need to be a little bit more conscious, and that means all of us, myself included, about where we're purchasing our products from and what kind of production is involved in getting those products to us. Sometimes we just make it so easy for ourselves to just go into a store and do not have to think at all about how that product got into that store. And that, you know, that's the same problem with meat production, with the cruelty to animals. I could go on and on, but right now it's really come into the news about the production of shrimp from Thailand and countries like that, Indonesia. So please sign this petition and be aware of where your shrimp is coming from and whether it's being sourced sustainably. And now I want to share a recipe with you before I invite Stephanie Sachs on to share with us some of the things she's been involved in. So this recipe is a tempeh portobello pepper steak recipe. And, of course, you know, this is recipes made in the kitchen, but with 4th of July coming up and all these weekend barbecues, one of the focuses that I'll be talking about with Stephanie will be what things you can make outside in the barbecue. So right now, tempeh portobello pepper steak. Preheat the oven to 450, and I like to cook tempeh really well. And so rather than sautéing it and frying it where you have to turn each little piece, I've gotten into roasting it in the oven at a high temperature just for, you know, 10 to 15 minutes until they're golden brown. So I slice the tempeh into small cubes, and I do that by taking the block of tempeh, cutting it in half, and then cutting it in half on the horizontally as well so that it's thinner, and then I cube it. And then I toss that with some olive oil and lay it out on some parchment paper on a baking sheet and bake that in the oven for about 15 minutes until it's golden brown. Okay, the rest of the ingredients that you need are 2 onions sliced, 3/4 cup chopped celery, 3/4 cup chopped carrots, 1 tablespoon plus 2 teaspoons minced garlic, 1 tablespoon plus 2 teaspoons minced ginger, 6 cups broccoli florets, 6 portobello mushrooms sliced, 2 cans of fire roasted tomatoes, 3 assorted bell peppers sliced, and I get this the organic peppers that come in a sleeve from Trader Joe's. They are like 1/4 the price of Whole Foods whole organic peppers, and they're really beautiful, the yellow, orange, and red. And if you want to throw in a green one, you can buy that separately. 1 tablespoon cornstarch dissolved in 2 tablespoons of water, and make sure it's organic cornstarch so we don't have any GMOs in our food. 1/2 cup red wine vinegar, 3 tablespoons tamari, 1/2 cup parsley chopped, 1 teaspoon red pepper flakes, and that's optional, 2 tablespoons sherry, and 2 pounds of gluten-free pasta. And I should say this recipe serves about 15 to 20. And if you're putting it out on a buffet with other food, it can even serve up to 30. So it's, you know, for a large quantity. So you, as I said, you cut the tempeh and put it on the baking sheet. But before you cook it, add 1 teaspoon of the garlic and 1 teaspoon of the ginger and a little salt, and then roast the tempeh for about 15 minutes. Meanwhile, you can bring a large pot of salted water to a boil and cook the gluten-free pasta according to directions. And then in a wok, you're going to cover the bottom of a wok with olive oil. Sauté the onions until they're translucent. Add the carrots, the celery, the ginger, and the garlic. And let that cook down a bit until they all start to get soft. Then add the mushrooms and cook that down for about 5 minutes until they get soft. Add the broccoli, cook that for a few more minutes. Then add the fire-roasted tomatoes, the red wine vinegar, the sherry, the tamari, the cornstarch, and the bell peppers. If you're adding bell pepper flakes, you can add those at this time as well. And let that all come together. Simmer for about 5 minutes, allowing the sauce to thicken. And that is it. It really cooks up quite fast, even though, you know, my ingredients, very often people say my recipes have a lot of ingredients. Know that you can really adjust those. If you don't have everything, of course, you need the tempeh and the tempeh, the mushrooms, and the peppers for this recipe. But sometimes, you know, you can really, you know, substitute things. Use things that you have in your house and really allow your imagination and your creativity to enhance the food and adjust it for what your likes are. You know, that's one of the beauties of cooking. I love to say, you know, when you're in the kitchen, you're the boss. And you get to pick the foods that you like to put in it and the foods that you don't like to leave out. So you're cooking for the people around you, and don't feel bashful to adjust any recipe to suit your needs. And now it's my pleasure to invite on my show Stephanie Sachs, who is a culinary nutritionist, author, radio host, educator, speaker, and consultant. She works hands-on with individuals and groups in helping them transition to a healthier way of eating. She's been studying food and healing for 25 years, has her master's in nutrition from Columbia, is a certified nutrition specialist, dietitian, and is a graduate of the Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts. And she just came out with a new book called What the Fork Are You Eating? Stephanie, are you with me?
I am with you.
Welcome. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. What great information you're giving everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, it's so important. You know, I love trying to encourage people to get involved because there's so many issues. I had my cousin over this past weekend who works for the Department of Peace. Who would even know there's a Department of Peace? But she
right.
said, you know, it's like, you know, anything that's environmental or peace enhanced, it's like the Republicans are you know, it makes them cringe.
It's just, right.
It's amazing what's going on right now. So
It is. All, it's amazing, and it's daunting for most.
It is, and it's really important for all of us to get involved and sign those petitions and, you know, get passionate about these things, because that's the only way we're going to change the world.
That is the truth.
It is. So before we get into all the different things you do, can you share with us a little bit about your history, how you got into healthy eating, what inspired you, and basically just your own bio. Share that with us.
Yeah. So, you know, I was inspired many, many years ago in the 80s when this wasn't the hip, cool thing to do. And I came to healthy eating because I was sick a lot. And for my summer job, I started cooking in a health food store. And I picked up a book called Food and Healing by Anne Marie Colvin. And it just spoke to me that what you put in your body directly impacts your health, and so many other things that she explores in that book. And so I started really experimenting with food, and I always loved to cook. I had been cooking since a very young age, and I started using myself as you know, the guinea pig and trying different dietary regimens. I tried macrobiotics. I tried vegetarian. I tried vegan. You name it, I tried it. And I saw how each way that I chose to eat changed my health or how it made me feel. Mm-hmm. And I was quite sick in that I had terrible allergies. I had asthma. I had recurring bronchitis. I had pneumonia several times. And so doctors, all they kept doing was prescribing drugs. And so with this education, I said, there's got to be a better way. And at the age of 17, I found this doctor up in Syracuse, New York. And this was before the internet, before we had information at our fingertips. I researched, like, who are the doctors that are talking about food who could really help me here? And I found this woman, Dr. Sherry Rogers, and she had written a book called Tired or Toxic. And I read her book, and I made an appointment to go and see her. And she put me on a candida diet.
Now, where were you living at that time?
I was living, my parents actually had moved out to the east end of Long Island full-time during that period, but I was in college near Syracuse.
Oh, okay, so you were up there, okay.
So I was up there quite coincidentally, although it wasn't coincidence in the end when you think about it.
Right.
So she said to me, I need to put you on a candida diet. Now, because of all the reading that I did, And all of the cooking that I did, I knew what that was, and I knew how to do it. And so I went home for the summer. It was between, I think, my sophomore and my junior year in college. And I went on a candida diet, and within 1 month, I was off 4 different medications.
Can you just quickly, without going into too much detail, share with my listeners what a candida diet is, in case there's people listening that do not know?
Yeah, absolutely. So a candida diet is a diet that is void of sugar, of yeast, of fermented foods, oddly enough. So fermented foods, of dairy products. So you can't even eat fruit. I mean, the farthest you can take it is citrus, you know, lemon, lime, really, that's it. So you have to avoid all the foods that are going to feed the bad bacteria in your body, okay? Because what happens is when you take so many antibiotics, it kills off the healthy bacteria in your gut, allowing for a yeast to grow that actually can cause illness and promote illness, and that yeast, the general term is candida.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was in that position, and I had many symptoms. And so I was able to clear my health with this diet and with supplements. And it completely changed my relationship with food. Not only did it change my palate, it changed my relationship with food. And I said to myself at the age of 17, why don't more people know about this? And so there began this intense personal journey of how food choice impacts health. And I didn't just look at it from a health and wellness standpoint. I was looking at ingredients that companies were putting in foods. And I was trying to understand where our food came from and how our food was grown or how animals are raised. And I became very passionate about all of these topics. And then I went to culinary school in the 90s. And then went on to get my master's in nutrition because I really wanted to help people shift and help give people the tools to shift. So everything I do is really through food, through hands-on experiences with food.
Mm-hmm. And after doing the Candida diet for a month and with all the other types of diets that you know about, whether it's a cancer-free diet or a macrobiotic diet or a raw diet, did you come back to feeling like the Candida diet is the best one, or do you are you a little bit more eclectic where you think there's a balance of different ones for different people? Or do you think everybody
eats the same diet? That's a great question, actually. And I actually just wrote a blog last week. I have a weekly blog. It was called My Position on Paleo. And it was really a look at all of these different diets. And I work with a lot of integrative doctors and registered dietitians who really look at integrative functional nutrition using foods throughout practice versus just nutrients, okay, prescribing supplementation, you know, low-fat diets using artificial sweeteners. We're talking about real foods. That's what I do with people that I work with.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that a lot of these dietary regimens are very, very valuable as what I like to call nutrition prescriptions, okay? So if you're dealing with illness, chronic or terminal, or you have some kind of, you know, let's just say you have a flare-up of eczema, I think that there are ways to manipulate your diet or go on specific regimens to help you through that period. But in the end, I don't subscribe to any one of them. I don't think that any one of them is better or healthier than the other because everybody is different. And I don't think that you can make a blanket statement about dietary regimens and say everybody should be on the paleo, everybody should be on that. No. Everybody is an individual. Our makeup is different. Our needs are different. Our cultures are different. We have access to different things. And so that has to be honored.
Mm-hmm.
So if I see somebody who has, you know, severe autoimmune problems in my practice and I'm partnering with, a clinician on their care, and we discuss a Candida diet, I will help them on a Candida diet, but that's not long-term. That's short-term.
Right.
So,
Can you share with people what a paleo diet is? I don't think everyone knows that either.
So the Paleolithic diet is a diet that's sort of based on how our ancestors used to eat. So it's also called the caveman diet, the Stone Age diet. It's a very high protein, low starchy carbohydrate diet, so really no grains and no beans. Its focus is, you know, animal protein, some dairy, nuts, seeds, high fruit, high vegetable, but nothing starchy.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the end, it's fairly restrictive, but I had a brilliant conversation with a dear colleague of mine who is one of the most esteemed integrative functional nutritionists in this country. Her name is Kathy Swift, and you know, we were on the phone the other day, and she said to me, you know, Steph, I just came out of teaching, and in the end, what it boils down to, we can talk about all these different dietary regimens. What it boils down to is people just need to eat a whole foods-based diet, limit processed foods greatly, understand where their food comes from, practice variety and moderation. And that's what it boils down to.
Yeah, you know, I talk about that so much also because, you know, when I hear people, you know, someone has cancer, they can't eat soy, you know, their doctor says no tofu, no, you know, and they're going crazy about soy, but the doctor doesn't say anything about, you know, don't eat GMOs, don't eat meat that has antibiotics and hormones, they don't tell you any of this other stuff. It's like, you know, yes, soy might not be great for you, you're not going to eat it every day, but if you're having a little organic soy during the week, it's, you know, you really, because everything in our society, because it's everything has some sort of toxicity to it.
Everything does.
Having the balance, eating a variety of different things so that you're not consuming all one thing. I mean, fish, you know, has some great nutritional things, but fish also has high mercury and has the PCBs and has,
well,
you know,
depending on what your choice is.
Right.
You know? And
yeah, you need to vary it, and that goes with everything.
That goes with absolutely everything. It is all about variety. It really is. And in the end, there is no scientific evidence that proves that soy, you know, promotes cancer. So the reality is that we need to integrate all of these foods into our diet and stop the extremes.
Right. Well, and this particular person said, you know, they're avoiding soy, but, you know, they were just having a craving and they, you know, went to Dunkin' Donuts. And I'm thinking, excuse me? You're avoiding soy, but you're eating Dunkin' Donuts? You know, and that's
the messaging
kind of
is warped, you know, and that's the problem is the messaging is warped. And I'll use this as an example. And many doctors and many practitioners and many educators resort to fear tactics. And I really am not about that. I'm about educating, you know, inspiring and giving people tools. And I was teaching a cancer workshop many years ago, and a young woman in her late 30s just had a double mastectomy, and she raised her hand and she said, "My doctor told me that I could never eat sugar again and that sugar promotes cancer." And she's sobbing, and she said, "My whole life, my whole adult life, I've had one cup of coffee in the morning with a little milk and one teaspoon of sugar, and I've stopped doing that." And she said, "It's completely destroying my everyday." And I just looked at her and I said, health is not just about physical health, it's about emotional health too. And clearly, just the amount of suffering that you're experiencing by removing that one cup of coffee a day is going to cause more illness than that one cup of coffee a day would essentially cause, or that your doctor's telling you it would cause. And she was like, she took this breath and she was like, "Oh my God, thank you. You've given me permission."
Right.
And the bottom line is that we have to look at health and life holistically. And, you know, what we eat in one moment is not a determinant of our health. It's the overall picture. You know, and you were talking earlier in the show about, you know, mindful investing. Where are you investing your money? You know, and we have to look at our lives holistically. What types of things are you out there supporting? What are you doing in your everyday in terms of, you know, waste or talking to your children about food? What do you choose when you food shop? Where do you food shop? You know, and what are you cooking? How are you feeding? We have to look at everything as a whole, not microscopically, macroscopically.
Right, right. And I think that's what, you know, confuses people, because they come into these new, this new awareness, you know, like I remember, you know, a new non-smoker or a new vegetarian, you know, where you're so gung-ho that you almost lose perspective of the bigger picture. And,
yeah.
You know, also as a, you know, as a chef, natural food chef, and I'm not a nutritionist, but I've been doing this work for 30 years also, so I have a lot of knowledge. You know, I don't want anyone to feel bad about their choices. So you don't want to be judgmental either about what somebody chooses, but you want to gently and sweetly guide them towards making better choices so that they're healthier. And, you know,
absolutely.
And if someone's going to choose to eat meat, I don't want them to feel bad about that. I want to show them, you know, what those choices of choosing meat is about, both environmentally and for your health, and how if you make choices so that you're buying meat that's more sustainably raised, and therefore it's much more expensive, so the good side is that you buy it a lot less often, that, you know, that kind of puts things into balance. You know, that's what I was talking about earlier about, you know, our society, we want everything cheap. And good quality does not come cheap. I mean, if you have a garden, you grow vegetables, you know how much work that is. You know?
Right.
It's a lot of work to grow a big, beautiful,
it is,
ripe tomato. And so you have to pay for that, you know? If you want to go get a tomato that's, you know, grown in a hothouse with, you know, pesticides and whatever, that's a different story. And it's not, you can get that cheap, but a high quality vegetables, high quality meat, high quality anything is going to be more. And so you know, as a result, don't get it as often, and that's better for your health and better for the environment. So it's,
well, and also, as I always say, do you want to pay on the front end or do you want to pay on the back end? Because you're going to pay no matter what way you slice it.
Mm,
that's the
reality.
That's
really good.
So put your investment in the food and not in the healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
That's really great.
So if you eat healthfully, you're investing in prevention. That's what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't see it that way. You know, people just don't see it that way.
Right. You know, that's a really, you know, a perfect a way for people to look at it, you know, because one thing that I also talk about often is how it's good business for our, for the hospitals and the medical establishment and for Monsanto's and for everybody to keep us unhealthy. You know, we have to look out for ourselves and keep ourselves healthy because our government is not going to do it for us.
Right. No, our government is not going to do it for us. The food industry is not going to do it for us. And they're not going anywhere. And they're going to continue to invent innovative ingredients that put products sort of in the limelight or in the spotlight, and people will continue to be ignorant about choices. And unfortunately, I mean, there are some amazing groups out there doing brilliant work where, you know, your listeners, my listeners for my radio show can access in a heartbeat, like Center for Science in the Public Interest, Environmental Working Group, Food Day, Organic Consumers Association. You can go, NRDC, learn about these issues, sign up for action alerts. Food and Water Watch is another one. I mean, they're brilliant organizations who are in the trenches doing the work to shift policy, to shift some of these things that are happening in this, you know, incestuous, big food, big ag, government, biotech relationship.
Right. Right. And everybody needs to do that. Yep, that's, you know, the inspiration you're giving your clients is the type of inspiration I'm trying to share as well. And we need more people to, you know, run with it and take that up and go with it because, you know, if you're depending on Fox News for your information or, you know, the Wall Street Journal, you're just not going to get it. You're not going to get the kind of information you need.
No. Well, hopefully, you know, and that's why I wrote the book that I wrote, because I've been studying this stuff for, you know, 25, 30 years, and I know who the people are who are doing the real work, and I know the organizations, and I know the policies, and I know all of that. And it was time that this information was shared in a way that it gives people actionable. So let me tell you about some of the issues, why they're bad, and what you can do about it. And so the book that I wrote is informative. It's inspirational, but it gives you actionables to really know how to make the changes. And you know what? No matter how small your changes are, they are big differences in someone's everyday, no matter how small. Whether you drink 2 Cokes a day and you cut it down to 1 Coke a day, consider that a huge change and a great change. And, you know, as one of my students once said to me, you know, Stephanie, you're highly opinionated, but you're not judgmental. And I said, well, you know what? That's a gift to hear, because I've learned over the years that judgment gets me or anybody nowhere.
Right.
What I want to do is I want to inform people with the right information and with the people who are doing the right work and the real work and guide people. Everybody is at a different place, and you need to meet people where they're at.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So before we get into the nooks and crannies of your book, which I really want to, and also talk about this weekend's big barbecue holiday time, let's take a couple-minute break. And when we come back, let's get into your book and shop in the farmer's market, okay?
Perfect.
Everyone, don't go anywhere. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green, and my guest today is Stephanie Sachs. We'll be right back. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm here with my guest today, Stephanie Sachs, who is a culinary nutritionist, author, radio host, educator, and an amazing person. Stephanie, you with me?
Thank you. Yes, thank you.
Sure. So, so this weekend's 4th of July weekend, and, you know, it's time for lots of outdoor parties and barbecues, and, you know, when people think of barbecues, they mostly think of hamburgers, hot dogs, barbecued spare ribs.
Right.
What do you suggest for barbecues?
Well, you know, I'm all for the traditions, but again, it's all about what kind of quality food are you serving. So where are you getting your meat? Who are you buying it from? You know, ideally you want pasture-raised, grass-fed. That would be ideal. And the two certifications to look for are animal welfare approved or certified humane. But unfortunately, it's not highly accessible in many of the markets around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And sadly, we can't really trust labels when they just say grass-fed or pasture-raised without those certifications because, unfortunately, our government doesn't truly regulate anything. They,
right.
They define
They allow
terms,
them to regulate themselves.
Exactly, which is quite sad. 97% of our animal foods come from factory farms. So
right.
What I say to people, you know, if you're going to the grocery store, you know, let's just say you go get chicken. You know, Murray's is a great brand, and they're actually certified humane. And so I always feel safe getting that if I can't hop over to my local farms, whether it's Iacona or Browder's Birds on the North Fork, and get mm-hmm. a bird there. As far as meat is concerned, you know, there are places in and around the east end of Long Island where I live where you can get grass-fed, but again, because of what I know, I actually don't really trust anything other than ordering from a ranch out west. So I actually order my meats from a place called Rain Crow Ranch out west, and they send a big case, and I just keep it in the freezer because I know that it's, you know, 100% pasture-raised, grass-fed, humanely raised, animal welfare approved certified. But I think, you know, again, what it boils down to is what do you have access to? What kind of choices do you want to make for yourself? Hot dogs, you know, Applegate Farms makes a fairly decent hot dog as far as hot dogs go. And
mm-hmm.
I'll even give my kids those. So I think, you know, and fish is a great alternative. We live in a coastal area. Go to your fish market and ask them what they're buying directly from the fishermen, directly from the boats. Don't go there and just pick something out that's wild. Buy something that's local, because most likely anything that's not local, even if it is local actually, is caught locally, it's shipped over to Europe for processing, and then it comes back here
mm-hmm.
for sale. Okay? So you really need to understand the supply chain. So
right.
you're back.
Well, that's again
what
I was talking about with cheapness. You know, the reason they would send it over to some other country for processing is because they're, you know, exploiting the people over there and getting it cheaper than
yeah.
you know paying the fishermen right here.
Yeah, which is it's really kind of scary. My a dear friend of mine launched a community supported fishery called Dock to Dish, and he's also doing a restaurant supported fishery called Dock to Dish as well, where he's working directly with the fishermen in Montauk and sourcing directly from them and then delivering. It's the CSA model, the Community Supported Agriculture model, and he's delivering fresh seafood, same-day caught seafood, to anyone who's part of his CSF. And then he's working with people like Dan Barber, Bill Telepan, Joe Realmuto, Jason Weiner, all of these guys, Eric Repaire, Jean George, and delivering every week, you know, 50 to 100 pounds of sustainably caught local seafood. And this is where we need to start to, you know, put our energy in asking questions about our food. So
mm-hmm.
when you do a barbecue, don't feel guilty doing a barbecue. Just go and buy Applegate Farms, you know, organic hot dogs that are nitrate and nitrite free. Okay, and the nitrates and nitrates, while they're naturally occurring, they're also chemical preservatives that are added to many lunch meats that are thought to be carcinogenic. And we don't need, you know, we breathe in the air that's toxic enough. depending on where you live. Why take in food when we can fully understand its toxicity, or even understand its toxicity on some level?
Mm-hmm.
So have the barbecue, marinate your meats. Okay, great thing would be to marinate your meats because it actually seals the moisture in and it protects the meat from getting too burned and charred. And grill and enjoy. But, you know, what I would say to your listeners is when you go to the grocery store, just open your eyes. And when you're buying the animal foods in particular, ask some questions.
Mm-hmm.
Just ask a couple questions.
You know, I encourage my listeners also to ask questions when you go out to eat. I mean, some of us go out to eat, and, you know, more and more restaurateurs need to hear from their clientele that their clientele is looking for higher quality products. You know, if you ask, you know, do you have any sustainably raised meat, or do you have any local fish? If you ask those questions when you go to a restaurant, even if you're sitting at that restaurant and you know you're not going to get up and walk out if they say they don't have any.
Right.
But just even asking that question raises the awareness that, wow, times are changing.
Yeah.
People are caring. Maybe we should spend that extra $3 a pound and get some local fish, or, you know, sustainably raised meat or organic chicken, so that we have something for these clients who are looking for it.
No, it's very true. I mean, I think there's a lot of shifting going on. You know, being in this space for as long as I've been in it, I was telling this to a friend yesterday, a colleague of mine, that it's, you know, I've been in it for so long and doing it before it became a thing, and now I'm really starting to see movement, and it's so exciting.
Right, I'm with you.
To see more people caring and asking more questions, and farmers markets abound all over the place now, and farm stands, and even being on the east end of Long Island, there's the farmers markets that have popped up in the past 5-10 years. It's just unbelievable. There never used to be one.
Right,
so,
right. Well, that's actually something I wanted to ask you. You're out in the Hamptons where there is access to lots of great local produce.
Right.
But it's not all organic. I mean, it might be all local, but not all organic. What do you look for? Do you rather something be local or organic? Are you looking for both? Do you care? You know, where's your...
Well, listen, my ideal is local organic, but, you know, organic can break the bank for a lot of people. So I like to use environmental working groups, pesticides and produce, Dirty Dozen Plus Guide.
I recommend that all the time, yep.
Yeah, which is great, and it's a downloadable app. So in other words, like, if my kids are eating cucumbers all the time or apples all the time, I'm definitively going to buy them organic. But again, I'm all about supporting the local economy and our local community. So I say this to everybody that I work with, or people that I, you know, when I teach in groups or when I speak, that, you know, I would rather support my local farmer and have a little chemical in my cuisine than buy California organic. That's how I see it, because I think that we have to look to our local communities to restore health to our economy and to the livelihood of the people who are here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it depends. I mean, if we're dealing, you know, if I'm working with somebody with stage 4 cancer, you know, I'm gonna say go organic all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really depends. But for me and my family, you know, I try to really enjoy the markets and the bounty of beauty that we have around us, especially during the season. And you know, even if the peaches, which, you know, retain quite a bit of pesticide residue, are not organic, but they're local, I'll get them. I will get them.
Mm-hmm.
So I get what it is that I want and what I like or what I'm inspired to cook with. And if it's not organic, that's not my ultimate determinant when buying locally.
Right, right. Yeah, I know, peaches, I have some fruit trees, and it's really hard doing them organic. And I have done them, or I'm doing them organic, but as a result,
right,
there's years where I haven't had any fruit, you know,
right,
and someone who's making their livelihood off of it, I really understand the people that say, you know, they use sustainable pest management. You know,
well,
where they,
this is the thing. It's called, you know, integrated pest management.
And
the reality is that, you know, and this may be a factoid that most people don't know, but there are a list of pesticides approved for use in organics. So even when you're buying USDA organic, there still are an approved list of pesticides that can be used in organic crop production. Okay? So, it's far different than what you're dealing with in conventional agriculture, but that's the reality. That's just the reality. So
mm-hmm.
you're getting chemicals in your food far less when you're buying organic, but you're still going to get a little.
Mm-hmm.
Unless somebody is really doing unless you're dealing with biodynamic, so a biodynamic farm, or unless you're going to have a conversation directly with your farmer.
Right. Well, that's it. When you said, you know, the certification is expensive. If I'm talking to a farmer at the market and they say, you know, they grow organically but they're not certified, that's good enough for me if I'm talking to the
right.
farmer and I have a relationship with them. I don't
right.
care
there,
so
there
much.
Also, there are also other labels. You know, there's, in 2002 when the USDA organic label came out, there were a lot of small farms that couldn't afford the processing and the application and the certification. And so there's a label called CNG, or Certified Naturally Grown, that is basically essentially organic as well. And it's for those farmers who could not afford the USDA organic. And so that's a wonderful label to look out for. And oftentimes you will see it at farmers markets.
Mm-hmm.
On various
Although
products.
I have a question about that, because I know that, you know, I've been I actually had an article last week in my newsletter, you know, about trying to make natural, trying to ban the being able to use natural as false advertising on so many products. Because somebody, you know, they can say something's natural and it'd be completely not natural. Natural really doesn't mean anything. So, so that's a question. Like, that would get confusing, I would think, to many people, that labeling, because you know, natural can still be, you know, they still give them antibiotics.
Well, unfortunately,
you know,
you're 100% right. But unfortunately, you know, natural did have meaning at one point. It did have meaning.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been so overused and misused. I mean, there was a brilliant video that went out. It was put out by, I'm trying to think. It was a whole mockery on the term natural. I mean, it was a brilliant
right.
video,
right.
and the name is escaping me right now, and I actually wrote a blog on it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So people can always go to my site at stephaniesachs.com and search my blogs for it. But
okay.
The reality is that when you look at CNG, Certified Naturally Grown, you need to understand, you can't just look at a label, you need to understand what these labels mean. So when you read the content of what this label means, the term naturally is being used essentially because organic cannot be used.
Right,
okay?
And there's nothing else in it. You're looking at produce, so.
You're looking at purest food.
Not processed
and
food.
You know, and like I say to everybody, when you're going to buy a car, how much time do you spend researching the car, test driving the car, talking to car dealers? How much time? People spend months sometimes, but they don't spend any time researching their food.
Mm-hmm.
That's
right.
scary, and that's the paradigm that has to shift. Because what you put in your body is far more important than what you drive.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And like you said, you're going to spend the money either on the front end or the rear end.
Absolutely. And I've seen it. You know, I can say this firsthand, because I actively practice one-on-one with people with illness, and I've been doing it for decades. And I work alongside some brilliant clinical practitioners. And so I have seen it. I have seen people transform, even if it's three things. What it does to their relationship with food and their health outcome is just remarkable. And I don't use fear tactics. I just state the facts. And I spin information in a way that's digestible and understandable and sometimes even funny. in a very sick way.
Right. So in your book, which I want to talk about a little bit before we run out of time, What the Fork Are You Eating? I love the name, by the way.
Thank you.
Do you kind of dissect how people can look at food labels so that they understand some of the ingredients in them?
I actually do. The first part of the book is a section where I look at the top 10 things that are in our food or being done to our food that I call, like, that they're just not cool, I say. And I tell my readers what they are, why they're bad, and the better alternatives. Because for every piece of garbage out there, there's a better alternative. You just need to understand what it is. And then I go into, you know, how do you rehab your pantry? And part of that is understanding the nutrition facts label, understanding ingredient lists, understanding health claims, understanding all the lingo that we see on our labels, you know, and it's extensive. So I'm really deconstructing this information. And, you know, then I help people really clear out their pantries. And then we go to the grocery store. How do you go through those aisles and make better choices? And then how do you get in the kitchen and apply this information? So that's what the book is. And hopefully people will walk away with, you know, if you walk away with one tool, I'm happy. If you walk away with more, I'm even more happy. But it really serves as a guide for people to make changes. You know, we've got some wonderful polemics out there by some wonderful authors. We've got brilliant cookbooks out there. We've got brilliant movies out there that talk about our food system and all the terrible things that are going on. Nobody is talking about real solutions. And my work focuses on how do you make these changes. Let's stop talking about the problems. Let's start talking about the solutions and in a way that is usable and doable for the everyday person, no matter what your socioeconomic status is, period, end of discussion. But that's what I hope to do with this book.
Right, right. Well, starting with real foods is a great place to start. And, you know, and also when you talk about the pantry, you know, when I talk to people about cooking, just starting to cook again, because so many people just eat out, that one of the things that makes cooking easy is to have a well-stocked pantry.
Right, exactly.
So that you can,
and in the book I give a pantry list on how do you stock your pantry. So that's part of it too. It's really a book that will help guide people, and they can pull from it whatever they wish.
Well, that's great. So where do why don't you share with everybody before we sign off one more time your website so that they can find you and your book, and then we will say goodbye. Yes.
Okay, so my website is stephaniesacks.com. That's Stephanie with an S for food. And you can sign up for my weekly blog there. You can also pre-order What the Fork Are You Eating there. And if you pre-order the book, it comes out actually late December. But if you pre-order the book, you're going to get a special 10 recipes that you're going to be immediately provided with if you pre-order. And you can go to my site and see all of that. And I also have a weekly radio show on Hampton's NPR called Stirring the Pot. And, yeah, that's it. You can find me at stephaniesacks.com.
Is that available on a podcast as well?
Yep. It's available on podcast. And if you sign up for my blog, you'll get a blog every Wednesday that will have, you know, an essay. It will have the radio show information and announcements. I also teach out in the Hamptons. I'm doing workshops at a Plain Tea in Southampton, lunch and learn workshops. So, you know, you can find out everything that I'm up to really on my site. Follow me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and you can get everything on my site.
Wonderful. Well, Stephanie, thanks so much for sharing all of your wisdom and knowledge and passion, and I'm so there with you.
Thank you for all that you do.
It's amazing it took so long for our paths to cross, but
I'm
sure we will be in touch now that we know of each other.
Absolutely. Well, happy 4th.
Thank you.
I look forward to having you on my show and learning more about what you're doing locally, because it sounded so exciting at the beginning of the show. I wanted to come and take one of those classes.
Ah, great. Well, come on down. So we'll talk. Anyway, everyone out there, I want to thank you for listening. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network with my guest, Stephanie Sack. See you all again next week. Have a great one. Bye for now.